This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. Our radio show is heard on Pacifica stations nationwide, and you can watch our TV show on Free Speech TV and on our website. Republicans have finally unveiled their version of healthcare reform after years of denouncing the Affordable Care Act and making its repeal the centerpiece of their platform. Lawmakers on Monday revealed the American Healthcare Act, which is not exactly a repeal of the ACA, or Obamacare as it's known. Rather, it's an attempt to tweak the law in line with the party's vision, while keeping provisions that involve children remaining on their parents' plans and pre-existing conditions. The GOP plan does away with the government mandate for purchasing insurance, among other things. However, several factions within the GOP are already making their opposition to the new bill known. My guest is Paul Song. He is a board-certified radiation oncologist, and he's on the board of Physicians for a National Health Program and People for the American Way. He's also the healthcare correspondent for this program. Welcome back, Paul.
Always great to be back.
So first, let's talk about specifically what it is that the bill keeps in place that Obamacare had introduced. And we've talked about these issues in previous interviews, but the ban that keeps health insurance companies from increasing your premiums based on pre-existing conditions, that has been one of the most popular things of the ACA. And I suppose Republicans realize that too. They're keeping that. They're also allowing children to remain on their parents' health insurance until a certain age. Why do you think they decided to keep those two things?
I think the big thing is when they, for those that actually went to a town hall or that were able to take a pulse of their constituents, those were two highly popular provisions that were really nonpartisan. You had people on both sides of the aisle that had been prior discriminated against because of pre-existing conditions who benefited greatly under the Affordable Care Act. And I think for them to try to touch that would have been political suicide, as well as the younger, less than 26-year-olds being able to stay on their parents' plans. Those were the least controversial issues of the Affordable Care Act and one that had unanimous support. So I think that it was wise for them to keep those in place, but really everything else is up for grabs now.
Let's talk about the mandate. This is something that Republicans railed against for a long time, and Democrats likened it to health car insurance, for example. You know, if you're driving on the freeway, you have to have car insurance, you have to have auto insurance, because if you do have a problem, then you're covered, and if someone else gets hurt, then you're covered. And Republicans just never liked this. The libertarian streak in them refused to accept that there should be any kind of a mandate to get health insurance. Now, they do away with that. However, people can still get penalized if they don't get health coverage and then they decide to get it later, right?
So with regard to the individual mandate, it first of all should be pointed out that this was a Republican idea that was initially introduced by Richard Nixon back in 1971 as an alternative to then Senator Ted Kennedy's more universal health care plan. But one of the things that I think the problem is with now the Republican plan is they're sort of saying they're in doing away with an individual mandate. But as you mentioned, insurance companies can now charge a 30% premium fine if people have lapses in their prior health care. So one way or another, they're trying to say that this is going to be the free market instituting its own penalties. But there's a lot of pressure for people to keep insurance one way or another. The economic penalty actually is much more severe under the Republican plan than it was under the Affordable Care Act.
Wow.
The other part to that is, the individual mandate is really an essential part to making the insurance plan or the insurance pool work. So if you don't have healthy people buying coverage, then you basically are going to have people with more serious medical conditions that are enrolling, but there's no spread of the risk pool. And I'm sure that the insurance industry is not going to be very happy about this aspect of the Republican plan.
Right. So just focusing for a second, though, it was under ACA and still is, that if you choose to not purchase health insurance, you pay a fine to the government. Now, if this plan by the GOP passes and becomes law, you would essentially not be penalized up until the point you need insurance. Then when you get it, you would pay a fine, but not to the government, you pay it to the insurance company. So in a way, it's also a transfer of money to insurance companies, isn't it?
Well, I think either way, you're transferring money to the insurance industry. Remember, the taxes that were levied on people to support the Affordable Care Act essentially were part of a corporate welfare program where people then got money to go buy insurance from a private company that only made money by denying care. So one way or another, I think this way the government is far working less as the middleman. But you're right, the money ultimately ends up in the insurance companies one way or another. Hmm.
So then there's this major issue with Medicaid, and it feels like the Republicans haven't been able to make up their mind on Medicaid. Under the ACA, people were able to enroll in their state's Medicaid plan. In California, for example, it's Medi-Cal. Is that accurate?
Yes. So this is the part that I think is going to have the most devastating consequences, especially in a state in California where one out of three Californians is currently enrolled in Medicaid or Medi-Cal, which is our state program. So as part of the Affordable Care Act, states were encouraged to expand their Medicaid with the idea that the federal government would cover 90% of all costs of the expansion and states would only be responsible for 10% of that. But what's going to happen under the GOP plan is in 2020, that will go away, that it'll be replaced with block grants, which will be far less generous than what the federal government is giving right now, and it'll be given on a per capita basis. That could have real detrimental consequences here in the state of California. California gets roughly about $15 billion a year for the Medicaid expansion aspect under the Affordable Care Act. And it's estimated that, you know, most states will see a reduction, who accept the Medicaid expansion, will see a third of their funding dry up. So, you know, we're looking at a huge chunk, a huge deficit that's going to be left in California. And California is going to have a real problem trying to figure out what to do, either try to raise taxes on Californians to make up for the deficit, or perhaps, you know, eliminate Medi-Cal for roughly, you know, 2 million people in the state of California. So either way, it's going to be very painful.
We're talking about vulnerable people who managed to get health insurance under Medicaid expansion through the ACA, not just in California, but around the country. Aren't a lot of these people Trump supporters who, you know, poor white Trump supporters who didn't realize that he and his party would actually keep their promise to repeal and replace the ACA?
Absolutely. Unfortunately, if you look at the number of states where people have Medicaid, it is more in traditional red states. However, under the Affordable Care Act, a lot of the red states and their governors refused to accept Medicaid expansion. It should be pointed out that under the Republican plan, a lot of these governors will now take the block grants, which for which they can innovate or do whatever they want, whereas before there were too many rules and regulations on how to use that money. So ironically, some of the red states may actually do a little bit better than they're doing right now. But the other thing to point out is that, you know, once you transfer this into a block grant, it gives you a finite number of funds, and it's fine in times right now where the economy is turning around. But let's say in our next economic slowdown, where people lose their jobs or are unable to afford health care and then need to be enrolled in Medi-Cal, if you've given them a block grant, the states are not going to have the ability to absorb all those people that come in an economic downturn who lose their healthcare coverage, who now need coverage. So this is going to be devastating on so many levels, both in terms of, you know, states like California have seen a marked reduction in the amount of undocumented, uncompensated care that we see in the state of California because of the Medicaid expansion. So I think the consequences are going to be beyond this. You're going to see hospitals laying off staff that they've been able to hire because they were getting reimbursed by taking care of patients who previously were uninsured. So you will see job loss. Talk about job killers. This in the health sector is going to kill a lot of jobs.
Then the other major difference between the Affordable Care Act and the Republican American Health Care Act, which is their version or supposedly improvement on Obamacare, the other important aspect is to the subsidy. So there were, as far as I understand it, under the ACA, if you made less than $48,000 a year in income, you were eligible for subsidy to purchase insurance through the government exchange, healthcare.gov. Now the Republicans have increased that cap, but you don't get subsidies, you get tax credits. Can you explain this difference?
Yeah, so under the old Affordable Care Act, while it's still in place for now, is that people who made between 138% and 400% of the poverty line, over the poverty line, were eligible for tax credit to then go purchase insurance. And so now what's happened is the Republican plan is supplying tax credits, but it's shifting the amount of money from basically hurting more poor people who already are struggling to pay for premiums, even with the tax credits. Their tax credits would be greatly reduced, as well as people now making up to $75,000 or couples making up to $150,000 would be eligible for a tax credit. So you're basically taking care of more of the middle class and wealthy, and really starting to hurt the poor, both in terms of taking away their Medicaid, but in terms of those that were getting a subsidy, they're going to see less in subsidies. The Kaiser Family Foundation came out just this week with a rapid analysis of this, and they found that the average person who is benefiting right now that receives a tax credit or a subsidy will probably see somewhere between $2,000 to $3,000 less and a subsidy annually towards their health care. Mm-hmm. The other thing is this idea of tax credits for those people that aren't making much, they're not going to be paying a whole lot of taxes. So how can you give them a tax credit when they don't pay much taxes?
Right. So a tax credit rather than subsidy benefits middle class Americans more than poor Americans. Republicans love tax credits because, first of all, it reduces the federal, it reduces money going to the government through taxes. And they hate subsidies because they look at it as welfare. But of course, you're right. When you're giving tax credits, you have to be paying for taxes to begin with. To pay taxes to begin with, you have to have a decent income. Let's talk about the politics behind all of this, Paul. And actually, before we even get into the politics, I want to play for you and our audience a video of the speech that Donald Trump gave to a joint session of Congress, where he laid out what he would like to see his party come up with to replace the Affordable Care Act. Here is Donald Trump.
Here are the principles that should guide Congress as we move to create a better health care system for all Americans. First, we should ensure that Americans with pre-existing conditions have access to coverage and that we have a stable transition for Americans currently enrolled in the health care exchanges. Secondly, we should help Americans purchase their own coverage through the use of tax credits and expanded health savings accounts. But it must be the plan they want, not the plan forced on them by our government. Thirdly, we should give our state governors the resources and flexibility they need with Medicaid to make sure no one is left out. Fourth, we should implement legal reforms that protect patients and doctors from unnecessary costs that drive up the price of insurance and work to bring down the artificially high price of drugs and bring them down immediately. And finally, the time has come to give Americans the freedom to purchase health insurance across state lines, which will create a truly competitive national marketplace that will bring costs way down and provide far better care. So important.
That is Donald Trump speaking to a joint session of Congress just days ago, where he laid out what he would like to see the Republican Party come up with. It sounds like some of it they did get. He talked about Americans being able to choose the plan they want, not the plan forced on them by the government, the freedom to purchase health insurance across state lines, etc. Paul, there's a lot of sort of rhetoric of Americans having access to health care. I know Bernie Sanders has said something like, I have access to a yacht doesn't mean that I can actually go out and buy one. Does this plan meet the criteria, as far as you know, that Trump has laid out?
Well, again, the president has been speaking very vaguely and in generalities. So I would imagine that no one really is sure what his specifics are. But I think some of the things that you mentioned, it does meet with regard to, you remember the Affordable Care Act had these minimum basic requirements that all plans had to meet, which are now no longer going to be required. So, people will be able to buy a cheap plan that's very flimsy because they feel like, wow, that's the only plan I can afford. Whereas before, they maybe would not have been able to buy such a plan because the really in reality did not provide the coverage or the preventative services or things of that nature. So people are going to need to be very careful in terms of the insurance products that will now be available to them. Certainly this will be state by state, and states will be able to then decide what the minimum requirements are, but that will no longer be a federal law. The other part is the idea that, you know, this is essentially less of a healthcare plan and more of a massive tax cut. Remember, all of the taxes that were levied to pay for this, to try to keep this revenue neutral, were on people that made over, you know, $200,000, on medical device makers, pharmaceutical companies. There was even a provision to tax exorbitant CEO salaries of insurance companies of greater than $500,000. All of those taxes have now been repealed or will be repealed, which will leave roughly a $350 billion deficit. And when Republicans talk about, oh, we're a fiscally responsible party, they're still going to pay for a lot of the things that are being paid for right now till 2020. So you figure 2.5 years of payment, but meanwhile, the tax cuts will be going immediately. So this is going to blow up the budget. People believe it's going to reduce the solvency of Medicare by upwards of 4 years. And at the same time, more and more people are going to end up losing their coverage over the next 2.5 years. So really, I think the only real winners in this are the really rich, the medical device makers, and everyone else is really left to their own devices, which is really sad.
There are some within the Republican Party that oppose this for different reasons. It's a group of four Republican senators, Rob Portman, Shelley Moore Capito, Cory Gardner, and Lisa Murkowski, have sent a letter to Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. They're worried about the Medicaid cuts. Then you have Lindsey Graham, who's basically saying we need to really think this through very carefully and slow down this repeal and replacement of Obamacare. Then you've got the so-called Freedom Caucus within the Republican Party that are not happy with any or keeping intact any aspect of the Affordable Care Act. You've got the Club for Growth, who opposed this plan for completely different reasons. They want no protections for individuals, an immediate repeal of every sort of protection that patients won through the Affordable Care Act. Do you think any of these factions within the Republican Party could actually have some success in slowing down this plan, or do they just have enough votes to push it through?
So I think of all of the factions that you mentioned, I think the senators will have the greatest traction. One, they represent their whole states. Remember, most of the people in the Freedom Caucus are representatives who really represent a very limited portion of their state. When you take a step back and you represent the entire state, you see the benefits of the Medicaid expansion, and those four senators have seen that. Ohio, Governor Kasich went against his legislature and instituted Medicaid, and it's been widely successful. So that's where you see Senator Portman saying, you know, I need to protect this. So, you know, with a slim margin in the Senate of only 52 Republican senators, it doesn't take much to really throw a monkey wrench into the GOP House plans, because this was really a GOP House plan that's been, you know, written by Paul Ryan and now HHS Secretary Price. But I do think that it is real possible. The other thing people need to realize is there's been no Congressional Budget Office analysis yet. So we don't know really what the true impact of this will be, both in terms of financially, as I mentioned, a lot of people think this is just going to explode our deficit. And then the second part is the number of people that will be left uninsured or greatly harmed by this. So once you have the independent CBO provide its analysis, then you will have much more rigorous debate and discussion on this. But this is really, quite honestly, something that, you know, you had Republicans pass 60 repeals, vote on 60 repeals, and have 7 years to come up with something. And this looks like something that was just put together in 30 days as sort of a rush because they realized, oh, no, we're actually going to get this repealed and we have to come up with something, versus it was easy to continually oppose it, knowing that it would always either be filibustered in the Senate or the president would turn around and just reject it. So, you know, when it was time to actually govern and propose a plan, I think some Republicans, although they would never admit it, would say the ACA really was more of a Republican plan. It was something that Mitt Romney originally instituted in Massachusetts, and this was based on a Richard Nixon and then Heritage Foundation overall plan. So it's a pretty Republican plan that's in place right now. Just because it was introduced by President Obama doesn't make it any less conservative. And I think a large aspects of this, Republicans, particularly the moderates, are having a hard time now giving up.
Paul, we didn't get to talk about this, but I think it's really important. Just in time for International Women's Day, another hidden portion of this plan is the defunding of the non-abortion-related funds for Planned Parenthood. This is basic. And then Trump basically came out and said, if Planned Parenthood stops performing abortions, their funding can stay, even though the part of the funding this plan would cut, it wouldn't even be related to abortion. I mean, this just is like political blackmail.
And it's political hypocrisy. On one hand, they're saying they're pro-life, and that's why they're taking such a stance on abortion being excluded from any coverage, not only in terms of their impetus to defund Planned Parenthood, but really any health insurance plans that they should no longer cover abortions. But on the other side to this, so they only care that once you're born, but once you're born, they don't care about keeping you alive. So the reality is that now pregnancy will be a condition which insurers can charge more for, whereas in the past, especially under the Affordable Care Act, that was something that was cost shared with everyone in the risk pool. So I think this GOP plan is very hostile to women, to women's health. You know, everyone focuses on the abortion element of Planned Parenthood, but they provide so many preventative screenings for mammograms and pap smears, which greatly reduce the incidence of advanced cancer. So to now defund them entirely is really exposing women to unnecessary health risks, and it's another unfortunate consequence of this plan.
Well, finally, Paul, you and many other advocates for real healthcare reform for years have been saying what we really need is a single-payer healthcare system, like so many other industrialized nations do. Many people hoped that this push for by Republicans to repeal the ACA would be the best opening we might get in a while to demand a single-payer bill. What are the prospects for such a transition from the Affordable Care Act to single-payer rather than from the Affordable Care Act to what the Republicans have proposed?
So in Congress, you have Representative John Conyers' bill, H.R. 676, which has been introduced really for the latter part of the past 15 years or so, which calls for a national single-payer healthcare bill. We know that in this Congress and presidential term that will never happen. But here in California, we have a bill that was just introduced by Senators Ricardo Lara and Tony Atkins, calling for a California-based single-payer Medicare for All system here in the state of California. It's Senate Bill 562, Obviously, the specifics are still to be worked out, and it's going to face its own obstacles here in the state of California. We've had some members in the state assembly who off record have said they will do everything to prevent this from getting out of the assembly. We have a governor who has in the past not been receptive to such a program. But if there was ever a time to consider this, it's now, as California is going to face tremendous consequences of the GOP repeal and replacement, as we talked about before. And so to not consider this, I think, would be politically irresponsible and also economically irresponsible. And it's time that the people in California start to demand more. A recent study done last year by UCLA showed that of every healthcare dollar spent in the state of California, 70 cents is actually paid for by taxpayers, either in terms of our actual taxes or the tax credits we give companies to provide healthcare for its employees, or even what our city and state governments pay on health insurance for the employees. So California taxpayers are paying 70 cents. Coupled with the fact that the private insurance industry wastes about 20 cents of every healthcare dollar on administrative costs, which are mostly designed to deny care, on marketing overhead and CEO salaries, we're essentially paying for a universal healthcare system. We're just not getting one. Hmm. So you will hear false arguments that it's too expensive and we can't afford it. I would argue that we can no longer afford not to. California has a $150 billion unfunded retiree healthcare liability. We rank 47th out of all 50 states in terms of Medi-Cal reimbursement. We still have roughly 3 million people that are uninsured, even if the ACA was fully implemented, of which 335,000 are kids. So the time is now. We need to do something bold. And if the federal government is going to take action that's going to cause us to try to kick 2 million people off coverage who gained it during the Affordable Care Act expansion, then we need to do something bolder. And so this provides us a unique opportunity to have this discussion and to really push for something better.
Well, Paul, I want to thank you so much, as always, for joining us today. And we shall see how this political battle over this new bill plays out. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
My guest is Paul Song. He's a board-certified radiation oncologist. He's on the board of physicians for National Health Program and People for the American Way. He's also the healthcare correspondent for this program. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.